There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Oh my God, so today's subject is amazing. We've been waiting a long time to talk about this.
Ooh, boy.
Roswell, New Mexico. Something happened there?
Ooh. You know what I'll say about Roswell? The Roswell incident, if we're going to be correct. There's a lot of source material.
Now, the extremely short version of the Roswell incident is thus. In 1947, an interplanetary craft of unknown origin crashed in southeastern New Mexico, 33 miles southeast of the small town of Corona.
Yes, and that's why most people, UFO purists, believe that it should be called the Corona incident rather than the Roswell incident, because Roswell was just the town where the incident was originally reported. But that's also because Roswell had a police station.
Yeah.
And
well,
if you
Roswell
you,
was also the county seat.
I'm also going to put it this way. You can't have a gigantic international UFO incident if all you are is a Fuddruckers next to a liquor store.
Well, those Fuddrucker managers, they could get to some investigating.
I just know the problem is investigating is more like I bet that night waitress Stacy's hiding tips in her vagina.
That's possible.
I better go find it using my finding gloves, which are just his hands.
Right.
Roswell, by the way, an oasis in a desert of meth. I mean, if Roswell didn't have the International UFO Museum, if it didn't have this whole alien story, it would be like Hobbes or Clovis.
Well, absolutely.
Or Tewkumcary. Or Aztec.
Good
or
Lord.
Truth or Consequences.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah. I mean, these like southeastern New Mexico is just a meth hellhole.
Yeah.
But Roswell, they have a McDonald's shaped like a UFO.
You see? So this is why we cannot give these incidents to Corona.
Right.
Because if we gave them to Corona, all of the people who would be traveling around the world to come see the UFOs would just be stuck in New Mexico with a crippling methamphetamine addiction.
Isn't that sad? Cactus Jack, one of my favorite pro wrestlers, is from Truth or Consequences.
And really? It's also the legal name of the mayor of Corona.
That's Cactus Jack. Well, you have two names, you're mayor now.
No, UFO activity in the southeastern New Mexico area actually began the night before the crash on July 1st, 1947. Now, allegedly, radar activities in Roswell, Albuquerque, White Sands, and Alamogordo began tracking an object whose speed, acceleration, and maneuvers far outpaced anything seen on Earth up to that point. And the next night, on Wednesday, July 2nd at 9 p.m., Mr. and Mrs. Dan Wilmot saw an object fly over their house that was shaped, quote, like two inverted saucers faced mouth to mouth. And to lend more...
They were having sex. That's how you make extra saucers.
Did you call the top of a bowl? Do you call it the mouth of the bowl?
Yeah, that's how they make them.
The problem with people describing UFOs back in the day is that nobody really knew what to say about it. Now
right.
We have the flying saucer thing. You always hear people struggling with the description. It sounds a lot of
right.
times there's like, it was a pendulum type, oh, jibbity jabbity, hot air balloon.
No, a jibbity jabbity, that sounds more of a sound.
But that's what I mean. But a sound, but like a thing I saw.
Oh,
you know
I see.
Like if you could hear sounds.
If jibbity jabbity was a visual image.
You know how when you see the color red, you think of the number 4?
Yes, I do know about
that's
that.
That's me. That's what I have.
Do you smell smoke right now?
No. That's me just wearing this green shirt. That's what green smells like.
Oh, I see. So we know these flying saucers are up there kissing in air having sex.
Yes.
It seems to me like these aliens were maybe messing around. Maybe it was teenage aliens having a good time on a joy cruise and then they crashed 4 or 5 days later. Is that
or
possible?
They were heavily investigating what is our gigantic, our pantheon of underground bases deep within the deserts of New Mexico.
You don't think they were investigating the Corona trailer parks?
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely looking for it. It's like, we heard there was a water slide here and we find it fun. Funny that you are lacking in water, but you use it for amusement instead. You are doomed.
That is very true.
On July 3rd at 1 p.m., Police and multiple civilian witnesses see several discs flying in formation over Portland, Oregon, while a whole carload of witnesses reported seeing four of the same type of object not 3 hours away in Redmond. And at the same time, United Airlines Captain E.J. Smith and his co-pilot reported five discs during their flight, immediately followed by a second formation of four discs. So, while all of these things are in the sky over the Pacific Northwest, military facilities in Washington and Oregon go on extremely high alert. And while the Pacific Northwest was in an absolute tizzy over those flying objects, sheep herder Mac Brazel was tending to his flock with a young boy named Dee Proctor. Now, Dee is somewhat lost to history, and with good reason. Every attempt at interviewing Dee Proctor before he died a morbidly obese alcoholic in Ruidoso, New Mexico in 2006, failed. He had an almost pathological fear of even discussing the Roswell incident and was said to literally run out of a room at even the slightest mention of it.
Which was difficult for him because he was 450 pounds.
Yeah, they should have kept on mentioning it, and then he would have lost some weight.
All of a sudden he was in the 1984 Olympics.
Yeah, that would be great. Or like Mike Tyson's punch out, the cutaway scenes where you would bike and the trainer would chase you. Roswell, Roswell, Roswell. No, God.
So back in 1947, as the salty old ranch hand and his young boy assistant herded their flock toward the ranch's only water source, because remember, this is southeastern New Mexico, absolute desert, kind of mixed with plains, but for the most part, pretty barren, the two found they were blocked by a field of debris 3/4 of a mile long and 200 to 300 feet wide that his sheep refused to cross.
Which is very interesting. There's a the beginning of the Roswell incident starts with literally laziness, a farmer's laziness. He couldn't handle
it. No, it's not laziness.
It actually is strikingly biblical.
Yeah, you know, sheepish.
It's always a sheep herder that finds the next level of intelligence.
It just seems like sheep herders spend a lot of time alone and they're sick of talking to sheep.
Well, I agree with
that.
So
they make up fanciful stories in their head. Of being like, there's one time I saw a Jew who could fly, and his holes in his hands I could see through chicks' clothes. What he would do is that Jesus, he called himself Jesus, I think it was Jesus because he was brown, and he said, if you look through these holes in my hand, you could see a girl's boobies. You know what I did? And I did.
Well, I don't want to know what you did because then I'm complicit.
Now, here's what they found among the debris, specifically. They found small to palm-sized pieces of smooth, very thin, very light, but extremely strong pieces of aluminum-like metal that could not be cut, scratched, bent, or burned. They also found a number of thin I-beams measuring 18 to 30 inches long by half an inch wide by 3/8 of an inch thick, light as balsa wood.
But not balsa wood.
Okay.
Light as balsa wood.
Balsa wood is very fragile, can be broken very easily. This could not be. These little I-beams also bore writing in the form of unintelligible symbols that resembled hieroglyphics. What they said it looked like is it looked like hieroglyphics without the animals.
Yes. There's no animals in space.
That's letters, though.
Yeah.
There are animals in space, aliens. What? No, they're aliens' pets.
Yeah. No, I don't think aliens have pets, from what I understand.
We are the pets.
Yeah. Are we the pets?
Yeah.
Oh, so you remember ghost cats from the South? Do you remember the alien cats?
You remember nothing.
No, I remember alien cats. Of course I do.
One of my things I was kind of racking my brains about it, being like, if these aliens are millennia ahead of us technology-wise, why do they keep crashing?
Right.
How come we could keep helicopters in the sky? And helicopters are essentially knives with a basket underneath
pretty much it. Yeah.
With gasoline running through it.
Right.
Right. How do we do that, but aliens keep crashing? And what Chuck Wade's theory is that these radar facilities were being used offensively. We found out accidentally that they could be used to take down UFOs. And what they did was they were taking down UFOs in the New Mexico area using radar.
I think they were drunk. That's what I'm going to go with.
In America in the late 40s, I mean, there really was an hysteria of UFO sightings. This is the absolute height of UFO sightings. People are reporting it left and right. And we're coming right out of World War II. And the U.S. government is actually testing quite a bit of experimental aircraft and experimental missiles. All shit that we stole from the Nazis.
Literally, Operation Paperclip is going strong at this period in time. We got Werner Braun, the mad German scientist, is going to take us to the moon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Technically.
And he did take us to the moon.
It's true. Apollo 11 technically should have had a swastika on the side of it. And it probably did until the last 10 minutes. And finally, they were like, hey, guys, maybe we should scrape it off. We got cameras everywhere.
Oh, man.
And Werner's just like, how did the plane crash without the flow of the vril energy? They're like, no, Werner, you know it's rocket fuel. We're calling it rocket fuel.
So after Joyce seemed to take the case a little more seriously than Sheriff Wilcox thought it should be taken, the sheriff, he was the one that called up Roswell AAF, after which the base dispatched the man without whom we would have no Roswell story whatsoever, Major Jesse Marcel.
And you can literally see Sheriff Wilcox being like, you really want me to call it in? And him grunkle like, God damn it. And him taking off his hat and then picking up the phone, staring at me like, am I really calling this in? They're like, you've got to, Sheriff Wilcox. We got to stop these aliens from making everybody gay. And he's just like, all right. And he's like, pah. Like slowly dialing the phone,
sighing in between each.
So that afternoon, Marcel, along with fellow counterintelligence officer Sheridan Cav Cavett, traveled out to Foster Ranch with Mac Brazel, but because of the terrible conditions of the roads, the men arrived too late in the day to inspect the site. The three instead spent the night in Mac's shack eating cold beans and crackers.
Which in New Mexico is just what you do when you wait.
Yeah, I think so.
Everybody's got waiting beans and waiting crackers.
Right.
We call it visiting.
They could have warmed up the beans.
No.
They had fire, right?
There was no lightning that night.
I see. So you just got to hope that the lightning strikes your beans, and then, honey, we got warm beans tonight.
And the main thing is you got to hope that none of your bushes are wet. And that's not even me being fun and sassy. I mean, the bushes can't be physically wet or the lightning won't catch.
Oh, I see.
There are many witnesses, especially children, that were involved with this, because basically once the cops went out there and Marcel first went out there and they were digging up they were moving all of the debris off the field, there were kids just literally running around playing with shit.
Yeah.
And they were like, let him do it. And one, there was a girl that was a farmer, a local farmer came to help remove the debris from the field. And she remembers picking up the metal and watching it melt in her hand. And then she threw it on the ground. She was like, ha ha ha, that's fun. Like kids do when they don't realize that they are a part of something fucking deeply cryptic and secret.
Yeah.
And then they were apparently allegedly approached by the CIA afterwards, a man with a baseball bat, started talking to her, pulled her out onto her front porch, slapped his bat against his hand, and said, you know, a lot of little girls go missing in the desert.
That was Babe Ruth. Yeah, it seems like it's, you know what, to steal a term we always often use here, willy-nilly. They're just kind of going, where is the importance?
Cavett, after he loaded up all of his shit in the trunk of his car, he showed up at his house at 2 a.m. and shook his wife and 11-year-old son awake and made them come into the kitchen to look at the shit and play with the shit. Because at the time, it wasn't classified.
No,
yet.
Right.
So he wasn't necessarily doing anything wrong. He was just showing his wife and kid some cool shit that he found out in the desert.
Well, he said if this was really alien based, if this was non-terrestrial material, this is going to be the only time they'd get to see it, because it's about to become classified in a hot second. God knows if you're giving everybody cancer or not, but he didn't even think about that.
But this guy is Father of the Year. I gotta say, if you get woken up by your father and he shows you alien materials, very cool dad.
I mean, I don't know. Getting woken up at 2 a.m. by your dad to tell you about something that he found in the desert that day.
It sounds like something your dad would
would love that, Marcus.
I mean,
yes, you would.
You'd think I would have.
I know you would have.
Now, the odd thing about the Roswell story is that in some version, the Army is a rabid, hyper-vigilant force on top of every aspect of the story. And in others, though, they seem to be almost cavalier and just fancy-free about the entire situation. They, on July 8th, and this is, I don't know, this seems to be one of the oddest parts of the story and something that I cannot figure out why they did this. The Army released an official statement, almost casually stating that a flying saucer had been captured outside of Roswell a few days before by a sheep herder, and mentioned Jesse Marcel by name as the man who had recovered it. And they said that he was taking it to higher headquarters. He had loaned it to higher headquarters for further study. Why?
So this is Air Force.
This is Army. This is before the Air Force.
They still got planes. They're right next to the goddamn Air Force. And they're just being like, they know what it is. Mm-hmm. If they thought it was going to be a weather balloon, the first thing you'd say is a weather balloon. You'd just be like, it's a fucking balloon.
I mean, maybe
it's
made
out of liquid metal. And right. No one wants to talk about that it's fucking Colossus shit.
Is it possible?
Out in the middle of a debris.
They just got the verbiage wrong, though, and they're like, maybe we shouldn't have called it a flying saucer.
No, flying saucer's very obviously.
Yeah, but maybe
thing.
They just weren't, maybe they didn't really, like, understand
whatever
the phenomenon that was happening.
It was not a goddamn balloon.
No,
it definitely wasn't a balloon, but it's so weird that they would actually say flying saucer. I almost think that it was someone, like, sarcastic. Someone accidentally.
Right. Yeah, it's a flying saucer.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and put out a press release and tell them that it's a flying saucer.
And that kid's Willikers,
great. Gee Willikers, Mr. Marcel, I'll get right to the papers and do it. They're going to be way interested in this story. The aliens are everywhere.
Now, as far as the bodies go, allegedly, Glenn Dennis, a young mortician on duty at Ballard Funeral Home in Roswell, received a number of calls from the Roswell AAF mortuary officer asking about the availability of small caskets. The second call Dennis got was concerning various chemicals and what effects they would have on the blood and tissue of a deceased body, and also what procedures should be done for preparing a body that has been exposed to the elements. And when you hear the details of what the crash scene was actually like, according to some people, you'll understand exactly why the base mortuary officer was at a bit of a loss.
Well, yeah, you literally have the five tiny people that are all mashed up in different ways. And the first thing, you get a call from an Army officer. It's like, this is Colonel Bubba Duck. I'm not making up a name, but let's say I'm making up a name. Can I get five children's coffins over to this field right now?
It seems like if aliens land, do we have to give them a human funeral?
No, this is one of those weird, New Mexico things that they threw in there, being like, well, the government wanted to make sure they got a proper burial.
They want an open casket? I mean, what's happening?
Well, they needed to transport them somehow, and they thought it would be easier to transport them if they're transporting children's coffins.
Yeah.
That looks good for the government to just have a bunch of children's coffins lying around.
Well, because the problem is that no one really wants to, like, fork one open and see what's inside, you know, because then you have to deal with all the, my son's still alive!
Oh, yeah. I will say, if you have lost one, a loved one recently, and they're in a coffin, just check it out. They might
always
be alive.
I will say this.
You never know.
When I die, and if I decide to be buried in a coffin, I am now saying this on the radio, so you are legally bound to it. Once every 5 years, you are to dig open my grave.
It's illegal.
Open up the coffin and make sure I'm still inside.
I feel like you're just going to haunt all of us. Every 5 years, we're going to get together.
That's a part of
this. And it's going to be like, I know what you did last summer, and it's going to be terrifying.
Hey, so you know what time it is? It's 5 years coming up.
Oh,
gotta go. I'll get the shovels. Yep,
whole time, just
still dead.
Just me smiling, but not have decomposed at all.
His nails are still growing.
Now, Dr. Lejeune Foster, a renowned expert of spinal cord surgery and a former undercover FBI agent during World War II, was brought in to study the nervous systems of the mysterious creatures.
I don't know what these are, but
They're fucked up.
That's your professional. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a doctor. I've been a doctor for years. I'm an expert in spinal cord injuries and the nature of the human body, and all of these things are fucked to shit, and they give me the creepy weepies, and I'm about to shit my pussy.
Okay, they're fucked up. They're fucked as shit. They give you the creepy jeepies, and you're about to shit your pussy.
I got to get out of here.
You stand right by those
I just
comments.
Want to be done. I'll sign. I'm signing the form.
This
I'm
is the official
it.
Form.
Yep, July 7, 1947. I got to go because I have to clean all this goopy fucking bottom throw up out of my old hole here, okay? Because this is just, I am beside myself.
I say don't even bother coming back.
No, she was understandably shaken by the experience and was told afterward that if she said anything, her medical license would be revoked and she would be killed.
Jesus.
She was often caught remarking for years upon years afterwards,
"Someone in the government is trying to keep me quiet."
Doesn't sound like they're doing a good job. You seem to be talking an awful lot.
Yeah, and it seemed like, from what the description was, it seemed like it was just something she would mutter to herself.
I think her pussy's all full of shit.
Yeah, well, she's I do believe that. Around, she's wiping pussy wrong.
Her pussy's all full of shit, thinking about aliens 24/7. Government's trying to put a fucking muzzle on her.
You
like
can
she's
be hygienic.
Some kind of dog.
You can still be hygienic and
she's
think
got
about aliens.
Shit, open her pussy.
Well, I don't think that has anything to do with the alien invasion that happened during Roswell.
Poor stinky Lejeune. I wish she could get her shit out of her pussy and be ready and be able to live for free.
Flush it out.
She could.
Get a hose on it.
All right.
No.
Pay a kid in the neighborhood a
you
quarter.
You cannot pay a child to scoop. God damn it.
In 1947, you could.
Well, you could pay a kid to do a lot of stuff then.
I am now completely switched on this idea. Before, I thought Roswell was bullshit, but now I actually think that they found something from an extraterrestrial nature.
Well, you're using the ignorance fallacy right now, saying that
what you don't know is what you don't know, but what you know is what you know. But what you don't know sometimes can be bigger than what you know.
You sound like Donald Rumsfeld. I can't even deal
with
it.
I'm just saying it's about what you know and what you don't know.
No, you don't know.
You don't know, but what is it that you don't know?
I don't
bigger
know.
Than what you know.
We can't go down this road.
Something bigger.
And that is the ignorance fallacy, that what you don't know has to be what you want to know.
No,
what
no,
you
no.
Don't
it's some
know
of
has
what
to be...
you need to know.
All right.
But I'm on a need-to-know basis, but you know what I need to know? Everything. And there's a bunch of stuff I don't know. And there's a bunch of stuff that I do know is also highly debatable. But I do believe that the stuff I don't know is going to be more important than the stuff I know.
Right. So what you don't
because
know...
Because of how little I know.
Sure. It makes all the sense in the world.
Well, the debris was on its way to Dayton, Ohio. Now, weather balloon or not, a small amount of the debris was packed up into four brown paper-wrapped packages and loaded into a B-29 by Major Jesse Marcel, who, of course, is the number one witness to Roswell. He was ordered to supervise the transfer.
Well, you know that Jesse Marcel did not actually himself put those on a plane. It was a janitor named Barney.
Right. I mean, they just wrapped it up like a leg of lamb. I mean, did they tie
like
it
like in
with
the movie
little...
Scrooged when he shows up with his dad and the flashback shows up with him being like, hey, that's $100 worth of veal.
Right.
Yeah, that's how it looked.
So they have no respect for the debris. They don't think this is even going to be a story.
Well, in 1947, that's just how you transported everything. You just wrap it up in a brown bag. They didn't know really what it was. They knew that it was important. But on the other hand, you also don't want to draw a lot of attention to it.
It's because all their fathers were butchers. That was the only job that they could have gotten.
So much butcher paper everywhere. Everybody had the roll in their house.
Right?
No, Marcel, he comes into General Ramey's office. He hands Ramey the boxes. Ramey puts the boxes on his desk and said, hey, listen, let's go into this other room. I need you to show me on a map exactly where this crash happened. Marcel goes in. He says, all right, it's right here. It's near Corona, about 75 miles outside of Roswell.
These are the direct coordinates.
They come back to the office, and Jesse Marcel finds that the four boxes were missing, and they were replaced by a clean yet mangled radar kit of reflective foil, wooden sticks, masking tape, and baling twine with a little bit of rubber thrown in. In other words, all the makings of a weather balloon.
And the only thing Ramey could say afterwards was, Gotcha. Presto changeo.
What if they just went into the other room and it was just Raimi showing him one of those pens that you turn upside down where the women, the woman gets naked on the side of it?
Look at that.
Whoa. Look wait, wait. What?
Look at that. Whoa. Yeah. And then you turn it. Look at that.
Boobie. Whoa.
That used to be porn.
That is porn. And then you go out and then every single bit of hard facts about UFOs is gone.
Immediately.
The rest of time gone. You, U.S. history has changed.
Yeah. That chick's got boobies in the pen.
Look at that.
So that UFO material is gone up. Could I get the pen?
And the story stayed dead until 1978. 1947 to 1978, this was a non-story after It's a Balloon. That is when Major Marcel was tracked down by our old friend, nuclear physicist and UFO researcher, Stanton Friedman,
the most fearless pear-shaped man in existence.
Oh, personal hero of mine as well. Now, the Roswell incident was published 2 years later, and the rest is history.
Now, this is Stanton Friedman's stairway to heaven. Now, he has been cobbling together information about Roswell up until this point, left and right. This is before MJ-12 papers. This is him investigating the idea, because you remember the brief history we've done about Stanton Friedman is that he was a nuclear physicist. He had various security clearances and had heard bits and pieces about UFO stuff, and because he was a nerd, he was into sci-fi as a kid, and eventually, like we are sort of doing with our lives, he is turning his childhood predilections into a career.
Absolutely. Right. And destroying, I think, a couple of families in the process.
Very much so. But when it comes down to the truth, it's bigger than a wife, quote unquote.
One of his books, in the foreword, he thanks his family for putting up with him and apologizes profusely.
Well, if you've seen any one of his talks in entirety, and if you have, I will give you a $20 bill. If you watch any one of those in entirely, can you imagine spending a lifetime with the man?
You just got to learn to love him.
Yeah, you got to learn to love him. Yeah, and I actually, when I got these Roswell books at the International UFO Museum and Research Center, I, of course, bought a signed Stanton Friedman book, and I asked the woman at the gift counter, I was like, how do you know him? How is he? She's like, you know what? A lot of people think he's stodgy, but I think he's just the nicest fella in the world.
Isn't that
like,
something?
Wow, you fucked Stanton Friedman.
Also,
why did you make the mental leap that she had sex with him?
Well, I could see it in her eyes.
She just said that he wasn't terrible.
You could know when someone's had sex with Stanton Friedman if their eyes can go wall-eyed independently. You know, like,
She did have a veiled insult in her compliment.
Both, though. I mean, it was a quote. Yeah, some people say he's stodgy because apparently, I guess in Roswell, Stanton has
a bit of a reputation.
I'm sure he does.
He's a known quantity,
hard-nosed journalist. Also, the owner of up to 150 yards of suspenders.
Yes, and a hell of a YouTube channel.
But the other thing about Jesse's story, yes, it is creative. His story tended to change quite a bit. And because of this, UFO researchers are able to cherry pick bits and pieces of Jesse's story to fit whatever narrative they need whenever their claims are debunked. They're allowed to change the story, and they feel perfectly comfortable doing so. For example, when Marcel originally told Stanton Friedman about flying the debris to Fort Worth, he claimed that he was the pilot, that he flew the material himself. But when debunkers looked into his military history, they found that he had never actually even been a pilot, despite him also claiming that he shot down 5 enemy aircraft during World War II.
And what's funny is I did it with just my finger guns.
Oh, amazing.
It's just like, I was standing on the wing of the plane. You wouldn't believe it. Everyone said, Jesse, you're crazy. And I said, I'm crazy like a goddamn maroon.
Well, that would make you crazy.
A maroon is a type of weasel. I went out onto the wing of the plane, and I was just pointing my fingers just because I knew I could.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I took down all of the Luftwaffe with just my index fingers.
That's a passenger airliner.
Yes.
Innocent.
I had commandeered a passenger airliner. I was going to Toledo to see my sister get married. And right. I got to say, we were all even surprised she was getting married because she was 475 pounds.
But you hijacked the plane.
Oh, I hijacked the plane, but I could because I told them I was a pilot.
Where were you on 9/11/2001?
Oh, I was in the grave.
Right. Yeah, he did. He died in the late 70s.
Oh.
And Marcel, he was all like, as far as other things that he lied about, he bragged to Freedom that he had a bachelor's degree in physics, that he studied at two different universities. But investigators found that he never attended one of the universities and didn't finish his degree at the other. And in fact, his military records state that when he was inducted into the Army, he listed his education as none.
I mean,
high school.
Street smarts.
Right. If you're going to lie about it, give yourself a master's. He just went with a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, he went with the bachelor's of physics.
I don't want to go too crazy.
Well, yeah, because if the master's, at some point, something would be like, oh, well, you know how to handle this. You have a master's in physics. And then he would have to be like,
Let me show you my pen.
I got this pen.
Yeah, and when faced with these outright lies, these aren't even exaggerations. These are outright lies. Researchers rationalize this by saying that military records are, quote unquote, notoriously inaccurate. And that may well be, but it's a huge contradiction to, on one hand, say military records are notoriously inaccurate when it doesn't suit you,
right,
while using those same types of records involving transfers and trips and telegrams as proof that something was going on. It's like Alex Jones saying the mass media is lying to us about Sandy Hook and Aurora and Boston and is complicit in the globalist takeover, and then turning around and using a news story from CNN or NBC as proof that the globalist takeover is
happening. Your source material is from the globalist fucking source. It's all the same cognitive dissonance.
But it doesn't add up in their minds.
But he is right that aluminum is making kids gay.
That is possible. It's a bit of a confirmation bias right?
Yeah. I mean, they're looking for what they're finding what they want. They're looking for proof, and they're finding it in the same places that they're finding lies.
But isn't that the nature of reality in general, Dog Meat?
Yeah, it is.
That you seek out what you find, and what you find then shapes your reality, and then when your reality then becomes your own singular reality, and then it becomes reality itself.
Truth is
truth is boom.
Truth is boom. And out of all the witnesses, only 7 of them claim to have actually seen the debris. And a couple of those 7, by the way, were children at the time.
But what they do remember is afterwards. But that's what's interesting, though, is that the memories all line up. For that stuff, with the debris, the memories line up. And the fact that these kids were literally threatened with death by government spooks is a thing that is very, it's interesting.
I mean, but it's also, but you could also see that, like, there's things that from when I was a kid that I don't really know whether they're dreams or whether they're reality.
You were molested.
Right. He was not molested. It was a goblin outside of his.
Was the pig goblin real? Was the pig goblin not real?
It wasn't your uncle.
It was not my uncle.
It was real to you.
Yeah.
So then it becomes real to everyone.
Yes, right. It is reality. The pig goblin of Lubbock, Texas exists.
In no way, let's make it clear, was Marcus Parks molested.
Never once.
Not one time.
Close. A couple times.
Well, now we're okay. All right. We don't want to really know.
Sounds like you were flirting with him.
Yikes.
No, Corso claims that in 1961, he was given the official files on the material that we recovered from Roswell and was instructed to filter the technology from the military into the mainstream via industrial development.
You fold it in like chocolate into a delicate mousse.
Oh, yeah, now you're talking.
No, eventually, through reverse engineering, people like Corso were able to develop such modern technology as lasers, integrated circuitry, fiber optic networks, accelerated particle beam devices, and even the Kevlar used in bulletproof vests.
Tickle me, Elmo. Betamax. Spinny hats that little kids wear yes, you see them in the pictures of the 1920s. What that is time travelers from the future, from the 40s, going back into the 20s and putting them on kids' heads.
Interesting.
And also condoms.
You've never seen a skinny kid with a spinny hat because they'll just go right up.
Yeah.
You gotta be fat, stay low.
Pinion.
That's right.
Well, apparently, Stalin's plan was to take a bunch of mentally challenged children.
Like kids that were too smart and so they needed to be challenged? Like it was like school was too easy for them?
That's right, yes.
No.
This is advanced classes for the Russians.
He would take these mentally challenged children, hideously deform them using Mengele-style tactics, load them into an experimental aircraft, fly said aircraft over the border from Mexico, crash land them near a population, and when the deformed, retarded children crawled out of the wreckage, they would spark a War of the World-style panic!
It's a balloon! But that's the problem. They kept saying that when it came out of it. Right. It's a balloon!
It's a balloon!
Unbelievable.
It's a great idea. It's the thing that makes the most sense. It has slowly eroded our education system. We're doing terrible, against the Chinese and things like that. But so I think they might have won.
Her theory is not that it's Mengele-style tactics. Her theory is that it was Mengele himself.
Oh.
And that the Russians
That wasn't in the last chapter.
No, the Russians had hired him in between, after World War II, he went into hiding.
Yeah.
Stalin kept him alive. Basically, they caught him, kept him alive just to make this experiment. And this is a part of what her anonymous contact in the entire book, all of the other contacts that talk to her about Area 51, they state their names, they go on the record, or they talk about the top secret programs that are happening in Area 51. This man said, spoke anonymously, and he said that, yes, that Stalin and Mengele designed them, literally drew them on paper.
Right.
They created the modern gray together just because Stalin used to do this thing, because Mengele used to do this thing back in the day where he would split open Jewish people's heads and put extra skull in them just to see what they'd look like.
Yeah, strange it turns out.
Now, supposedly, the Nazis were masters of UFO technology.
UFO-like technology.
Right.
Right.
Can we say,
pedantic piece of shit.
But you know, and as far as the Nazis and UFOs go, and as far as the Nazis and advanced technology goes, CIA agent Gene Poti said with a fair amount of confidence,
Hitler invented stealth.
And
is that your interpretation of a fair amount of confidence?
Is that what Gene Poteet sounds like?
Hitler invented stealth.
There we go. That's a fair amount of confidence.
That's a fair amount. And Hitler used that technology to build his stealth bomber, the Horton Ho 229.
Woo.
God, it sounds like a special, like
prostitute.
Yeah, a huge prostitute or just like 5 pounds of mashed potatoes here.
Now, this is where I want to say again, the layers of disinformation and the stories that have been built into Roswell are all completely insane. I wonder why some of them exist. Why did this officer, quote unquote, anonymously tell Annie Jacobson that this is what's happening at Area 51, that this is what happened? Yeah. Right? Like, why did that story come out of nowhere? Maybe that is why they wanted it keep it so secret, but it's just so nuts. It's even more nuts than aliens.
Well, the Russian one is nuts. The Nazi one kind of makes sense.
But the Nazi one is also...
The Nazi one is the most reasonable theory we put forth so far.
But is the UFO technology even real? We don't see planes hovering now. It's 2016.
Maybe didn't work very well.
But it just seems like if they were zip-zopping all over the place in fucking discs that had zero point energy, whatever the fuck it's called, we'd have it. It'd be places.
Maybe it was unsustainable. Maybe... The airplane industry, in conjunction with the automobile industry.
I'm about to leave. No, it's true.
No, maybe it's very possible that
fuel companies.
Yeah, a free, clean energy source would be hidden from us. Or it could be the exact opposite, that it is cost prohibitive, that it takes, a ton of plutonium to make zero point energy. Or it could be that the power sources were from an unknown source.
It's people.
If it was people, we would have zero problem.
We would get rid of the homeless problem in a second. Just grind them up into UFO fuel.
Yeah, or it could be
you
that
should
we
talk about that on Fox News tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do
grind
it.
Up homeless people because they can be used for UFO technology. No, to fuel UFO technology.
That will please your base.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it, Ben.
I guarantee I do it. Guarantee it.
Then, of course, if it's not the Nazis and it's not the Russians, of course, there's the possibility that it is God.
Now, this is from The Invisibles. You're excited about this.
Well, I'm very excited about this. And I think Grant Morrison's The Invisibles, while it is fiction, honestly, just as credible as any other thing, any other source that we use for alien episodes. This theory, this Grant Morrison's theory, it says that what was captured in New Mexico in 1947 was, for all intents and purposes, God. Here is an abridged version from what I remember. The aforementioned Trinity atomic test in the New Mexico desert opened a hole in quote-unquote reality, and when Robert Oppenheimer uttered the words,
"I am become death, destroyer of worlds,"
he invoked the idiot god of nuclear war, which caused the creator of their universe in the form of magic mirror to goop out into the New Mexico desert, where it was promptly scooped up and kept captive in, you guessed it, Dulce underground base.
So it's either doy doy Russians or God?
Yes. And maybe there's no difference between the two.
And of course, if it's not Russians, if it's not Nazis, if it's not God, who else could it be?
The devil!
The devil! It's always something. You know what? Don't blame the fucking devil.
Don't blame the devil.
Don't blame the devil. The devil's fine with you.
Cooler,
the devil barely exists, and you're nothing. You are nothing.
Why are you yelling at people?
I'm already mad.
It would be so much cooler if it was the devil.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it would be way more metal.
And of course he crashes the plane. He's getting blown by a butt, like an eight-headed lizard woman.
Fuck yeah.
Well, it wasn't the devil inside the plane.
Oh,
it was
I
the
see.
Devil controlling the aircraft.
Now, this information comes from the highly reputable echoesofenoch.com.
Yeah.
And it's a site that specializes in biblical research of the paranormal.
Yeah. And the man who runs the site, Jim Wilhelms, actually moved himself and his wife to Roswell from Detroit in 2003, following,
a calling from the Lord to stand in the gap from one of the biggest lies to come against the faith in a personal God since before the flood.
Also, Detroit is not doing well.
No.
Good city to get out
of. No, is the wife there voluntarily or is she a hostage?
Right. Good question.
Nonetheless, Wilhelms has managed to find a passage in the Bible that he believes with all his heart is directly related to the Roswell incident. Again, this is an abridged version, but it is from Zechariah chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Then I turned and raised my eyes and saw there was a flying scroll. And he said to me,
"What do you see?"
So I answered, "I see a flying scroll." Then the angel who talked with me came out and said to me,
"Lift your eyes now and see what this is that goes forward."
So I asked, "What is it?" And he said,
"It is the basket that is going forward."
And he also said,
"This is their resemblance throughout the earth. Here is a lead disc lifted up, and this is a woman sitting inside the basket."
Then he said,
"This is wickedness."
And he thrust her down into the basket.
It's wickedness.
And threw the lead cover over its mouth. Then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings.
It's wickedness.
For they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the basket between earth and heaven. So I said to the angel who talked with me, "Where are they carrying the basket?" And he said to me,
"To build a house for it in the land of Shinar. When it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base."
I mean, it just sounds like they used to write down night terrors, and then it became the Bible. Now,
what does all this mean, though?
Nothing. How is anybody religious?
There's a woman in a basket.
There's a woman in a basket.
And somebody dropped a newspaper in front of a fan.
It's a balloon. It's a balloon.
She's got stork wings.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And as the final word of proof, Wilhelm presented a single line from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, verse 17. "I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven."
Very cool.
That's double bass.
Oh, my God.
Svar, I gotta say, bro, I love your solo in the bottomless pit of Maul, but I gotta say, can we cool it on some of the double bass? It's like, but I just got this double bass, man. Roswell.
Oh, my goodness.
Something happened.
Yeah.
What it was?
Right.
You tell me.
You tell me. Yes. That's what people have been asking me for the last, you know, 3 weeks, a month. They're like, so what's the next episode? Like, fucking Roswell, man. They're like, huh, so what do you think happened?
Shut up.
Like, and
yeah. You try. It's literally been consuming my life the last 2 weeks. I've been doing is reading, watching Roswell.
Yeah. I think it's a balloon.
You think it's a balloon?
I think it's a balloon. Why the hell not?
You know, my thing is, I don't think that it's balloon, but I think that it's like, it's a balloon to somebody. It's, you know what I mean?
What is a balloon exactly?
I don't think it's what's a balloon?
If it's not a balloon to us, it's a balloon to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Aliens just probably being like, I wish we hadn't lost that taco truck in Roswell last week. You know what I mean? Like, that's all they could think. They don't know what it is.
Yeah, right.
But I also believe there is something, too. There's a book I'm reading right now. If you want to know everything there is to know about modern UFOs in one book, it's this book. And it's very interesting. It's if you are a person like me whose whole life has been marred and destroyed by your UFO knowledge, it's a lot of stuff that you already know, but it's very useful, and it puts it all in one place. But the one thing he kind of talks about is the nature of UFOs. It's very interesting, and the idea of them being either natural or handmade, and whether or not that is mechanical or animal. And what we're looking at for UFOs, a lot of the times, that if they are interdimensional crafts, if they are something from another realm entirely, they can be something that we can never understand. Like, literally something like a natural machine, like a machine that is alive, that it's a UFO thing that literally... The UFOs themselves are alive, and they can come through,
right.
And there is another type of entity altogether. So yeah, maybe it crashed, and maybe it had a fucking heart attack. Maybe the thing was alive, and had a fucking brain aneurysm, and it died in the middle of a goddamn desert, because that's where a lot of old people die.
We've reached the max. Henry, we're losing you. Henry, come back. Henry, put the book down just for a second.
Okay.
Psychedelic nature to aliens.
Yes.
Difficult to put your finger on.
I think for right now we have reached our limit.
I think
of alien conversation, Henry. We have to keep you alive.
Oh, I'm bringing this book on the plane. I'm about to go.
Don't start yelling.